out there. It's a nice day out there, isn't it? Welcome to this edition of the Arts Magazine program. I'm Michael Hoog, your host. Glad to have you with us today as we listen to the Arts Magazine show, as you listen, right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Yes, we began our holiday show interviews last week. It continues into this. In fact, both of the interviews on the show today have a holiday flavor to them a little bit. Different directions, perhaps, in the case of our second interview, way off in another direction. But we'll have fun with it, as we always do here on the Arts Magazine show. This is where you'll hear about most of the holiday shows that go, at least as many as we could book throughout the holiday season. Today is no different. Today we're going to journey out to one of the newer groups, and to me that means less than 3 years old. And they are about that. The Summit Theater Group of Lee Summit, and I should just say Summit Theater of Lee Summit, is doing The Gifts of the Magi. It opens on Thursday, December the 4th at 6 o'clock p.m., Friday the 5th at 6 o'clock, Saturday the 6th at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then they're going to do it all again on Saturday evening the 6th at 6 o'clock p.m., and that's because it's a dinner included with show. We'll get into that as our program continues. It's at the Emmeline Ballroom, 616 Southwest 3rd Street in Lee Summit, Missouri. And with us to tell us all about it, the director and the lead actress in the show. It's nice to have the directors come because they can answer all these little nagging questions. You know, right. I'm like Lieutenant Columbo. You know, little things bother me, and I have to get it out and get all of that.
No problem.
Talked about. Well, I'm glad it's no problem because the questions are going to come anyway. All right. The director is Kristen Janelle Sullivan. She has this is her first time directing, she told me, but she has a lot of credits as a performer over the years. Her local and regional roles have included Masterclass, Patience, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, The Pirates of Penzance, those real evil pirates. No, they're kind of fun pirates, really. Other shows as well, Little Women, The Shape of Things, Sister Chantel, 1776, The Night the Music Died, things like the Collegiate Vocal, Chestnut Fine Arts Center. I know Brad. What show did you do down there?
My first show out there was Godspell. And then I did How Great Thou Art, which was like a gospel summer show, which was lots of great fun. And then we did It's a Small World, which was Brad's very first venture into Disney music. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're also one of the Dickens Carolers, I see.
Guilty, yes.
How many performances do you do over the season?
Actually, I had my first caroling gig for the season on Friday. Yeah, it was awesome. At downtown Overland Park for their tree lighting, and I think I've got like 4 or 5 more coming up.
Yeah, and this is her directing debut, as we said, with this. Is this your first holiday? Well, I guess if it's your first directing debut, it's your first holiday
first
show.
First everything, yeah. Yeah.
We'll explain how that works later on. Ginger Birch is with us as well. She is a performer at heart and has been an avid community theater participant since 2001. Her most recent appearances was with Annie with the Blue Springs City Theater. We had a group of them here. She couldn't come that day. So. But she has been here before.
I have, yes.
A few years ago. She has done The Sound of Music, The King and I, Man of La Mancha, The Wizard of Oz, The Pirates of Penzance. Oh, you were also in with
them. Yeah, I think actually Kristen and I shared the same role because I played Edith. Love that show.
When Kent City Repertory Theater did that years ago, they told me, well, be sure and say, because we want kids to come, so be sure and say that these are not scary pirates. With Gilbert and Sullivan, you know,
it's
scary pirates.
Yes, exactly.
Well, welcome to the show, The Gift of the Magi. It's a holiday show. It's a traditional, it is a traditional holiday show in some quarters.
Right. The story, the central story is well known by a lot of people based on the O. Henry story, The Gifts of the Magi, about Jim and Della, and Ginger plays Della. So, Ginger, you want to tell them a little bit about that?
Sure. Jim and Della are, young and in love, and they have fallen on some hard times with Jim not having a job, so they are just you know, working day to day, trying to pinch pennies, and he's constantly looking for a job. And, you know, Della just desperately loves Jim so much. All she does is for, you know, helping him to find a job and just loving him as much as possible. And it just destroys her that she cannot find a present for him and afford one. So they go to their ultimate sacrifices, sacrificing, you know, her hair, and Jim sacrificing his family heirloom pocket watch, and they in turn buy presents for those specific things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just a story about love and sacrifice in the holidays and what you're willing to give up.
Yeah, don't tell how it ends. Now.
Sure.
Oh, we won't spoil it.
Yeah.
Keep it a mystery. Of course, were you attracted to do this show?
I was. It's such a... For me, I think the thing that was most interesting and appealing to me was... I was certainly familiar with the story, but as I read it, there were these little scenes where I was like, oh, I love that we get to see this playful, optimistic, quirky side of Della. I mean, she has some moments where it's like, whoa, Nellie, and it's just this optimistic side of her that both pushes Jim in a good way and sometimes irritates him, but we get to see that real interaction between them. I think for me, probably most of my experience to the show was just about the hard times. You know, just that they were two people struggling, and I was like, oh, this is kind of a downer for a holiday show. And so I started reading the script, and I started finding these little bits that were playful and sweet and intimate, and I was like, oh, I can get behind that. Yeah. I like that a lot. That's so real, you know, because I think any married couple who's been together for any length of time, you experience those downs, but those downs don't mean that nothing is funny, you know. You still continue to hold on to bits and pieces of your personality and that kind of thing. So I really love that about the particular Jim and Della side of this show.
Yeah. Well, now, the reason we play the disclaimer at the first part of the show is because for opinions that people might not agree with. And I, for instance, I think too much emphasis is on giving gifts. Some people give gifts for members of the family, the extended family, every niece and nephew, and all of that. And it gets to be a bit much sometimes. Now, a show like this brings back that all into perspective, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly does. Yeah.
Yeah. When you went into the part, what kind of little... See, everyone likes to put their own special mark on things. And that's especially true of directors, by the way, but also of the lead actress as well. Did you have anything that you wanted to especially get across in your portrayal of Della?
I am still working on my character. It's been, you know, a work in progress these several weeks, and I think I'm finally kind of honing in on her quirkiness and fun quality. And I think I was a little too serious at first, thinking about just, oh, how much she loves him, and you know, she's just so proper housewife, you know, and she wants to provide and show Jim how much, you know, her love is there, and you know, she's just a lot of fun, and she could be a little dramatic, but that's okay, because, you know, that's a little bit of what I'm like at home, so so I just kind of had to tap into what I'm normally like behind closed doors and let that come out with my character.
Okay, well, let the audience take that into consideration. This is a lot like what she is like behind closed doors. The songs. I'd love to know about the songs. Most of your credits are musicals. You probably have some that you did. Most of your credits are listed as musicals.
Yes, most of my experience is with musicals.
So what about the songs? Tell us about the songs in this show, the particular meaning behind some of the songs.
Probably the most powerful of Della's songs is her solo Same Girl. And after she has sacrificed something to give Jim, you know, what she thinks Jim would love for Christmas, you know, she wonders if she's still going to be the same person to her husband, and she struggles with that. It's very, very dramatic, and you see a completely different side of Della at that point.
Yeah. Does the director give input to this?
Probably more than what's wanted.
Probably more than
being the musician that I am, and you know, Tim Brazelton, our music director, we've worked really closely together. So we have a really close collaboration where if I give a music note, he's like, amen, do what she said, because he knows me that well. He really trusts my input that way. I think it helps that I understand what's happening from the character's standpoint as well as what the music is demanding of them, because we'd like to think that they always go hand in hand, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes you have this, you know, very difficult song to count or to hear your notes, depending on what the accompaniment is underneath it, and yet you're trying to tap into almost a contrary emotions, and it can be really tricky. And so that's what we've been doing over the last week of rehearsals, is just kind of layering that on. You know, we got it all staged. We kind of looked at the bones of the show. Great. Now play, make bigger decisions, go out there. Let's see what you have underneath this character. And that's kind of what we've been diving into this last week with Same Girl and a couple of other really fun duets, like, let's see, Once More is a song between Jim and Della, when Della surprises him by bringing home a tree limb that she found in the gutter, and it's going to be their Christmas tree. Oh, goody. And she's just bound and determined that it's going to bring some Christmas cheer to them. And Jim's like, okay, sure. Whatever you want, honey. And then they have this just fun and imaginative song about how, you know, if Mr. Cartier came and gave me a ring, well, of course I wouldn't want it, because the gem would weigh down my hand. And, you know, they just make fun of it. And they just say, just tell me you love me once more. That's all I need. But yet they have these just fun adventures into kind of la-la land, but it's just so fun to take the audience on them.
Yeah. Do you have fun doing that?
Yes, yeah. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Sure. The show is The Gifts of the Magi. Goes back to biblical times, the gifts that were brought to Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've seen, as I have traveled to Bethlehem, I did last spring, and you saw the actual setting of where it happens, it makes this come all the more strongly to you. It has more of a personal meaning when you see the actual place and look into the sky where they were actually following a particular star and all of that. It makes it even more clear. And I wish everyone in the audience could experience this. It's such a powerful thing to have happen. With the Gift of the Magi, it opens on Thursday, December 4th at 6 o'clock p.m. And you say, well, isn't that a little early for a show? That's because dinner is included. It's a dinner theater production. What are the particulars on that?
Oh, it's catered by the Outback Steakhouse.
Mm.
So come hungry. It's going to be great.
Hopefully there'll be steak.
I'm still working on getting food for us, for the cast. I'm like, oh, I'm sure you'll have extras, right? Just bring it on down.
I'm sure they will.
We'll get in the green room. It'll be great.
We'll go out on the limb and say yeah. So dinner will be at 6. When will the actual show get underway?
I think it's going to be around 7:30. They want to give them plenty of time to eat and, you know, probably to fill up on their beverages of choice. And then our show is about an hour and 20 minutes. So it's there's no intermission. It's kind of a all in one piece, but trust me, you won't be sitting there fidgeting at all. It's a very entertaining show. It's very fast-paced as well.
Yeah, you'd be wondering, well, what's going to happen next?
Oh, yeah.
If he's going to get her this, or if she's going to get him that, what's... And back end, you kind of do wonder what's going to happen here, and what are the reactions going to be ultimately when they find out what they've received and all of that. Right. But the show the dinner part begins at 6, and the show part begins about 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the Emmeline Ballroom. Now, I know the Summit Theater Group has several different locations. They've done performances in a church. They've done performances at Longview College, and this particular show is at the Emmeline Ballroom. The address I have is 616 Southwest 3rd Street. That's basically kind of the downtown part of Lee Summit.
Yeah, it's just west of downtown. It's right at 3rd Street and 50 Highway. Okay. So if you get off at 3rd Street off of 50, you're going to be right there in that area. There's a new CVS on one of the corners, and it's basically right across the street, right across 3rd Street from that.
Yeah. Tell me, why did you pick this particular show to want to direct? Any personal stories? Well, if it's funny, we certainly want to hear it. If it's not very funny, we can
hear it. That's a funny story because about this time last year, I was attending Lee Summit High School's musical, and Ben Martin and James Wright walked up to me and said, hey, we need a director. And I was like, oh, you do? For what? And James has said, oh, it's a show, The Gifts of the Magi. And so he got me he got me a CD of it so I could listen to the music, and I was working on some other projects at the time, and I remember listening to it, and I thought, oh, dear, this music is tough, and I kind of spoke to James about that. I said, yeah, what do you know about this show? And he said, oh, we did it at Quality Hill. Yeah, they did it in 1998, and if anyone knows anything about the productions at Quality Hill, they are quality, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is tough music. So they're wonderful musicians that work there, and I thought, oh, how am I going to do this kind of music in a community theater setting? So it's been a big challenge, but... You know, I've got some great musicians in the cast, and I've got some really hard workers in the cast, and so they have just taken it and run with it. And most people are not afraid to say, yeah, I don't know my part there. Pound it out for me again. Let me get that. So the music has been a real challenge. So I didn't come up with the show. James just kind of suggested it to me, and I said, okay, I think I can do that.
Well, he knew that while you had performed many, many times, you had not directed before. Did he know this?
I don't know. Probably not.
Well, James is a very tall man. Who is that guy? Well,
right. No, I mean, and I talked to Ben about that, actually, because Ben has directed for, like, what? I don't know. I don't want to insult him, but like 35 years or so.
I doubt that he'd be insulted.
I hope not. I hope not. I just kind of said, well, this is my first time directing, so will you make sure I don't, you know, play the fool? And he was like, yeah, sure. I'll come in and check on you and stuff. And he's been in every once in a while, and he has great things to say. Parts of it were scarier than I thought, but the actual putting together of the show, not so much. It was a lot of fun.
I would think the key is, and you mentioned the name before, the musical director of the show.
Yes, Tim Brazelton. He's been awesome. He does many, many things all around the city. He's worked for Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. He's done Leawood Stage Company, several different companies, and he's just a top-notch musician. So he's been wonderful.
And did he suggest, well, we need a certain number. We need a piano player. We need a... What do you need? What did you need, and what did you have?
That, again, kind of comes down to the other aspect of me as a director being primarily a musician and performer myself. And so I just said, here, Tim, I think this is what we can do. And he's like, sounds good. Because he was in the middle of doing a little night music at Leawood, and so he just kind of took my word and said, all right, let's do it. Sounds good. I trust you. I'm like, okay, are you sure you want to do that? He was all on board. So.
Is it better to have a smaller combo? Or a big orchestra might be hard for a show like this.
Yeah, especially with the small space that we have.
And yes.
The show is just very quaint, and I think the one piano just kind of lends itself to a very intimate feel.
Would you rather have, Ginger, just one piano or a whole orchestra?
I think it just depends on the show and what is best. And for this show, that's what's best.
You know, and this show is such an intimate one, and our space, which is good because our space is a very cozy one, okay? So it works well. You know, it makes sense. It all kind of... it complements each other, the piano. We are going to have a little bit of percussion thrown in, but very little. It works. It really does.
Yeah, tell us about the other performers in this show. The husband who gets just as involved as you.
Yes, Justin Damer. He is playing Jim Dillingham. Mm-hmm. So,
and he was last seen in
All My Sons.
Yes, Summit. And now I want to say Summit Theater Group, but Summit
Theater. Well, I was corrected on that. It's just Summit Theater.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. He was in All My Sons. He's been a longtime performer in Kansas City. He was in Little Women with myself as well as his wife. So I've known them for quite some time. And they make him and Ginger, they make a good pair on stage.
He's been a lot of fun to work with, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And then Ray Eninger is our Soapy Smith, which Soapy is a bum character that comes from another one of O. Henry's stories. And his whole function in the show is that he is trying to land himself in jail, get himself shelter for the winter. So, and unfortunately, he has to deal with people's charitable hearts, and no one will throw him in jail. It's a hard life. It's a hard life. But Ray has done, he's been performing in this area forever.
He's going to be mad at me. I remember him doing something in the mid-70s.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
And it was probably, and he seemed pretty polished then.
Oh, so. Yes, absolutely. He, I mean, he came to our first rehearsal pretty much knowing all of his music already.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
he's
course.
A wonderful musician, and he had all of his lines on, and I was like, Ray, I love you. You just make my life so easy.
The rest of us were pretty disgusted, but, you know.
Well.
So he's been great. Then we also have, there's The City. The City Him and The City Hers. And we have Nancy Chipchase, Patty Moore Armstrong, and Jared Hill that are playing those parts, and that is just a hoot because literally they leave stage as one character and they come right on as another. It's just constant changing. Anything from a kooky old lady to a police officer to a lady on the street corner, take that as you will, to a snobby lady walking down Park Avenue. I mean, they're all over the place, and they have some really fun and some very difficult music to sing, but they're awesome. Yeah. And then our last cast member is our youngest by far, Lainey Zornis, and she plays Willie, and she's playing that as Pants Roll. She's 11. So, and she's the storyteller. She's the narrator, but she also plays her part as a newsboy. It's been a huge challenge for her, and she's just taken it and run, and it's been pretty cool to work with her on that.
Yeah. The gifts of the Magi, more than one. Often you'll hear people say gift, but it's gifts,
yeah.
Because there's
yes.
more than one involved. Opens Thursday, December 4th. Performances continue then Friday the 5th. Then two performances on Saturday the 6th. One is at 1 o'clock p.m. The other is at 6 o'clock p.m. Meals before every show, even the 1 o'clock show on Saturday. I guess one of you told me more than
correct,
more of a lunch
yes.
of mm-hmm. that day. At the Emmeline Ballroom, 616 Southwest 3rd Street in Lee's Summit. Tickets can be had at the Lee's Summit Hy-Vee stores.
Correct.
Go in there and I guess go to where
the customer service desk yeah. is where you can purchase them.
Yes. Say that you want to buy tickets for the Summit Theater. Don't say group. You can also go online, though. And while I was corrected not to say Summit Theater Group, what is the website? SummitTheaterGroup.com. That's the. But you can make you can get your tickets on there as well.
Yes, and I was told that since it's catered in, you do want to get those tickets no later than 2 days before the performance
okay.
that you want to attend, because they'll be looking at numbers. They want to make sure that the food is really high quality and you know just fresh and hot and all those good things that we want from our food. So 2 days before the date that you want to attend.
Okay, and the phone number to call in case you have any questions. Perhaps you can make arrangements on the phone as well. I don't know. But the number is 816-463-2654. Where you can make arrangements to see the Gifts of the Magi presented by the Summit Theater of Lee Summit with us, Kristen Sullivan, the show's director, Ginger Birch, who plays the role of Della. Is any more challenging than any other musical role you've had before?
Yes, definitely. like Kristen said, the music is extremely difficult, but the character is just so different than I've played before, so I've just really had to work to hone in on who Della really is.
Yeah, well, you were Glinda the Good Witch, the Wizard of Oz.
That's a little different than
that. And in Man of La Mancha, you were Antonia.
Yes, and Sancho's donkey.
Oh, nice.
That was fun.
Did you do the braying?
The praying?
The braying.
Oh, no. No, we did not actually vocalize anything, thank goodness. Just had to wear a styrofoam donkey head on my head. So
you did a performance of The King and I.
Yes. Yeah. I was Lady Tiang for that one.
Was the makeup very extensive?
Well, we had a little bit of stuff to make our skin look darker and, you know, heavy eyes, but that was it.
So. And you were in Annie as well. You couldn't come with the rest
yes.
of the Cascade, but you had been with me one other time.
Yes, when I had done Maria with Raytown Arts Council last 2013.
Sound
yes.
of Music, mm-hmm. yes. No, that was a very successful performance.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. A lot of really good children in that show.
Yes, we had a great cast of kids.
You've probably worked with a lot of children. This is your first time directing, but is it easier to work with children? Some directors say, yes, it's easier. You can tell them what to do, they do it. Others will say, it's a little more difficult than adults.
I would say it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both. I think the thing that's fascinating about working with children is they don't analyze their actions for the most part. So what you get is really, really raw, which sometimes is great because that's exactly what you want. And then sometimes it's way too much, but it's always easier to pull an actor back than to push them to make a bigger, stronger choice on stage. So that there's that part of it that's... that it's easier. It is a little bit more difficult since we do rehearse in the evenings. I mean, a typical bedtime for an 11-year-old is around 8:30.
Oh, you probably keep these people
and
till 11.
She's staying up until 10, so she gets a little loopy. around hour 9.
She keeps us entertained.
She does keep us entertained.
She's great.
Oh, definitely. She's a really hard worker. She has the bug. I mean, oh my goodness. She does a lot of the coterie education outreach classes. Anything. She wants to audition for everything.
Well, tell her. Especially tell her folks, you know, once you get that bug, you don't ever get over it.
Yeah.
It's an incurable disease. You can manage it, but you don't ever get over it.
Yes.
As you both know, of course. Once again, let's go over the details. December 4th, the 5th, and two performances on the 6th at the Emmeline Ballroom, 616 Southwest 3rd Street in Lee Summit. Go to your Lee Summit Hy-Vee stores. You can ask about ticket arrangements there. You can go online to summittheatergroup.com, or you can simply call. And you can call 816-463-2654 to make your arrangements. If you want to see The Gifts of the Magi, starring Ginger Birch, one of our guest here today, directed by Kristen Sullivan. She is the director of the show. Are we going to see you directing more things as time goes by?
Maybe.
She should.
Possibility. Mm-hmm.
So the key to this would be just walk right up to her.
Oh, no.
This seems to work.
It worked once. Do it again.
It worked once. Yes, do it again. Thanks so much for being with us. Ginger Janelle Sullivan, the director of the show, thank you for being here. And Ginger Birch, who plays the role of Della. Thank you both for being here and telling us about The Gifts of the Magi. What will they be? How will they be received? Beginning December 4th at the Emmeline Ballroom, a production of the Summit Theater of Lee Summit. Thank you very much for being with us. We're going to take a break. When we return, more holiday entertainment to tell you about a dark look at the Nutcracker. Oh, should be exciting. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1 could also have been titled The Setup, and that's really all it is, a setup for the series finale, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2, which will hit theaters next Thanksgiving, 2015. In a move to maximize the box office potential of this wildly popular franchise, the last book in the series has been padded out and expanded into two films, and sadly, the padding shows. This well-produced sci-fi opus is only for those who've seen the first two films. Anyone joining in midstream will be hopelessly lost. In the dystopian future, Katniss Everdeen and the rebels continue their chess match with the evil President Snow of Panem, attempting to overthrow his totalitarian government that benefits the few and exploits the many. The greatest strength of the film is the same as before, Jennifer Lawrence. As Katniss, the reluctant rebel leader, she doesn't hit a single false note. This self-assured actress commands the screen even when she shares it with first-rate co-stars like Julianne Moore, Woody Harrelson, Donald Sutherland, Jeffrey Wright, and the late Philip Seymour Hoffman. Director Francis Lawrence keeps his main asset front and center, and Lawrence delivers another riveting performance. The action scenes are pretty sparse this time out, but they're still fairly violent for a PG-13 movie. Mockingjay Part 1 is more of a sly poke at the power of propaganda. As Julianne Moore's character says, the worst terror in the world is waiting for something to happen. Hunger Games fans will be in terror for yet another year. Also opening this week, Force Majeure is the Swedish drama that won the jury award at this year's Cannes Film Festival. It's the story of a family who, while on a ski vacation in the French Alps, survive a near avalanche. The marital strain the incident causes, however, shakes the family to its foundation. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM. Freeze Frame!
90.1 FM presents Tonight's the Night, a tribute to the music of Neil Young. Wednesday, November 26th at 8 p.m., the night before Thanksgiving, Davies Uptown Ramblers Club. A full night dedicated to the music of the one and only Neil Young, featuring Alexis Barclay, The Hardship Letters, Cody Wyoming, Two Headed Cow, Jason Vivoni, Chad Brothers, Mikhail Shapiro, Barry Lee, Clark Wyatt, Lewis Myers, David Paul, Sarah Carpenter, Matt Darvin Davis, Paul Andrews, and many more. That's Wednesday, November 26th, the night before Thanksgiving at Davies Uptown. For more information, kkfi.org/events.
This week,
horror would not be too strong a word for some of the reactions that I've seen online for people who didn't know about this. It's hard. It's very hard.
It's the latest news from the Mormon Church. The founder, Joseph Smith, had as many as 40 wives. I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Interfaith Voices, Tuesday at noon.
In memory of legendary film director Mike Nichols, who died last week, we present an interview with him on the set of The Graduate from 1967. The Pacifica Radio Archives from the Vault, Wednesday mornings at 5 on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Why are large numbers of children leaving their home countries in South America and immigrating to the United States? Could current U.S. policy be a root cause of this mass migration? Judy Ansel, president of the Cross Border Network, will connect the dots on the All Souls Forum this Wednesday at noon right here on KKFI.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. It has become one of the staples of the holiday season. Oh, yes, I know. The Kansas City Ballet does the Nutcracker, and they've been doing it for many years. And, yes, we're scheduled to have them on the show, I believe, next week as well. Wow. But there's also another interesting show of the same general storyline has been done for the last several years at least. Jennifer Owen is with us. She is the Owen part of the Owen Cox Dance Group. And they are presenting for, and she'll fill us in on this. I don't know how many years now I can, but it's been a number of years.
This will
now
be our sixth year.
The sixth year of doing The Nutcracker and the Mouse King. Yeah. More of a darker version of the same story with her own special touches to it. Jennifer is the co-founder and artistic director of Owen Cox, when your name is part of the group. It's only right, of course. But the co-founder and director, her career has taken her literally around the world. She has been with the Russian State Ballet, the Moscow Ballet, the Kansas City Ballet, the Hong Kong Ballet, Ballet Met, the National Ballet of Turkmenistan. Now, that's one Mini's country I haven't been to, but literally danced all over the world. But she ended up somehow right back here in Kansas City. Interesting the way that goes. But the Owen Cox Dance Group is known for their collaborations, unique versions of shows, and The Nutcracker and the Mouse King is no different. And I'm surprised when even theater people say that they haven't heard of this version. It's from the Hoffman story, of course, yeah. And dating from 1816, yeah. And you make your own arrangements and things of that nature. But what gave you the idea to originally tackle this?
Yes, well, it's a modern jazz adaptation of the traditional story, and Brad Cox and the People's Liberation Big Band did a concert of just creating new music, radically rearranged pieces of The Nutcracker, of Tchaikovsky's score, and it is a concert back in 2007, and it was a tremendous hit. It was very original and fun, and we thought it would be ideal to create a dance production to the music. So in 2009, we premiered the dance production, and it's been changing over the years, and there will be a few changes yet this year. So it's been just a wonderful holiday production that's fun and different and vibrant and highly entertaining for all ages, really. It's got a lot of humor and some darkness to it. It's a little bit scary, it's quite funny. So we're excited to get to do it again this year.
Oh, sure. And you're good, and you're becoming known for your collaborations. You really are. You'll work with artists. In fact, in this particular show, you're collaborating with artists. With you have dancers, you have musicians, artists as well. But this is the way you do things, and you've been become successful, should I say, by collaborating with different. With an artist, with a visual artist, with a film or video artist to make it all work.
Yes, that's true. And we are very committed to performing with live music. And so having the People's Liberation Big Band performing on stage with the dancers is, a very important element of the production. We have Mark Sutherland, who is a horn sculptor, very well-known musician in town. He is our Mouse King, our seven-horned Mouse King, and costumes are designed by Peggy Noland and Peregrine Honig, who just have some incredible ideas, very creative and very fun and bright to complement the look of the production.
You might remember Peregrine from that reality show, which has been several years now.
Oh, yes, Work of Art.
It was called Work of Art, and she, I guess, was the runner-up.
Yes.
But a lot of the people said, you know, she should have won.
Yep,
the fix was there.
I believe that.
We have a disclaimer at the first part of the show. So in my opinion, she should have won.
Sure, yeah.
But you know her well, and she's contributing to this show as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we have, as well as our nine professional dancers dancing with Owen Cox, we have six students from Paseo Academy performing with us as well, and they're some of the most advanced dance students at the school, and we've been working with them for the past month, and it's always a wonderful opportunity to incorporate young dancers into our production and give them a, performance in a professional production. And it's always very exciting and inspirational to get to work with
these
them.
These kids are very good, but they're working with professionals like yourself. Is that intimidating for them?
I think it challenges them to do their best and to really push themselves. And it's a lot of work, but it's something that they look forward to every year. We have some students that have done it in the past that are doing it again this year, and we have some new students that haven't. And when we audition the students, there's always a lot of excitement to get to participate.
Oh,
and I wish I could include the entire class when we do the audition. But this year we have eight students, so two of the dancers will be alternating the performances since we have two performances. So.
Well, that's nice of you to work more of them in as well.
We try to, yes, as time allows. For the rehearsal process, it is a lot of material, and they have to come to rehearsals with the company on weekends, and so it's a large commitment. But it's wonderful having them, and we're glad we can work with them.
The last time I saw you do this particular show, you had. I'm sure you realized that there were people from the actual Kansas City Ballet that were in the audience watching to see what it was that you did.
Right, yeah. It's a very different production.
Yeah.
It's a very different production, yes. And the traditional ballet is wonderful. It's magical. And the production that we do is a completely different take. It really is based on the E.T.A. Hoffman story, which is a fairy tale. It's kind of thorny and dark and strange, and it goes off on these tangents. There's the story within the story of the hard nut, which, because we incorporate narration, we're able to go a little bit deeper into the story than, say, the ballet, you know, that is, all just through dance and movement. We're able to kind of go into that aspect of the E.T.A. Hoffman story.
I suppose we should touch on the storyline for those who have never seen any version of the story. It's on television every year as well. You can't see it as well as you can when you're actually there seeing one of the productions. But the basic storyline, it does involve children.
It does. The main character, the heroine, is a little girl named Marie, and she's kind of coming of age. And she has a godfather, Drosselmeyer, who's a clockmaker and an inventor, and he is kind of the ringmaster of the whole production. And she is given this gift of the Nutcracker, and there's a story behind the Nutcracker that he was bitten by Madame Mouserinks, who cast this evil curse on him, and he became ugly and disfigured. And the story goes, if he could get a woman to love him, then he would become his you know, handsome self again. And, and actually, when Drosselmeyer tells Marie the story, the young Nutcracker is, you know, young Drosselmeyer. So it's kind of a little bit strange, kind of a unusual. Not your, you know, normal bedtime story for children.
Well, sure.
But, you know, it is a fairy tale. And so it's kind of like Beauty and the Beast in that, you know, there it's about love and redemption and coming of age. And so it's really a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful story in that regard.
Did when Hoffman wrote his story, was that based on a storyline from the original composition, do you think? Or did he come up with that part of it entirely on his own?
I believe he wrote the story on his own. Okay. Please don't quote me on that, but
is it a Russian fable? Is that the best way
to
describe it?
Well, Hoffman was German.
German,
so,
okay. When I think of it, I always think of Russian.
Well, Tchaikovsky was Russian, and the first production was done, the first ballet was done in Russia, and it wasn't very popular at all. It kind of fell flat when it was premiered.
Well, Drosselmeyer does sound more German than Russian, so.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a fable as such?
Yes, yeah, it's a fairy tale, yeah, and... So it's, I hope that our production really kind of takes the audience members on a journey and that they can laugh and be entertained and also kind of have some feel things through the promotion, production. It's, there's some really beautiful moments and some scary moments. And
I know you can't answer this question. It would be unfair and it would give away too much of the story, but people have asked me, and why they asked me, I have no idea. Is that a dream or is that for real? And I, of course, give the standard answer. Well, what does it mean to you? I hear so many artists do that, too.
Well, in the story, it's for real. It's not a dream. And it kind of leaves the reader or the viewer to interpret his or her own take.
Yeah, and do you put any interpretation into your version of it? And you can do that since it's an adaptation, at least... Brad, at least, has written some new music and things for it.
Right, right. I think it's told from the viewpoint of Marie. And, you know, when you're going through adolescence, it's hard to know what is what's reality and what's going on in your mind. You know, it kind of is a little bit blurry and a little bit scary, going through puberty and all of those experiences. So...
Those are big changes.
Yes, they are.
They are big changes for both sexes at that age. Now, 16 musicians of the People's Liberation Big Band of Greater Kansas City, led by Brad Cox, will perform both original music and radical rearrangements of Tchaikovsky melodies. Mm-hmm. Radical rearrangements. What do you think?
Well, it's kind of interesting because some of the divertissements in the second act are supposed to be of a certain part of the world. For example, there's the Arabian dance and the Spanish dance and the Chinese dance and the Russian dance. And the way members of the band had rearranged them, for example, the Chinese dance is in this Afro-Cuban beat and rhythm, which hopefully you'll play on the air because it's a really fun piece to hear. And the Russian dance was originally rearranged to be played on Balinese gamelan, so it had a Balinese flavor. I'm trying to think of the other... Oh, and then the Spanish dance has more of a Mexican mariachi feel to it. So it's kind of turning all of these, dances and sections of music a little bit on their head.
Okay, let's go. It's cut number 3, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's listen to a little bit of that right now. Well, I'll figure this out in a second. They recently changed machines on it, so,
oh, okay.
So we're going to talk about it. But I'm going to be working on it, and while I'm doing that, talk about some of the dancers in the show with you.
Yes, well, the lead role of the Nutcracker will be danced by William Cannon, and he's danced with us in the past, but this will be the first year that he's doing the lead role as the Nutcracker. He has danced with Aspen Santa Fe Ballet, Complexions Contemporary Ballet. He was named as Dance Magazine's one of 25 to watch in 2005. So he's a fantastic dancer. The role of Marie will be danced by Betty Kondo, who is a Kansas City favorite. She's danced with us for several years now and danced with the Kansas City Ballet, and she's just wonderful in the role. She's danced it for a few years in the past.
Okay, let's try it again.
Okay.
Come on, work for me. Some of the music there, I guess, originally written by Brad Cox.
Actually, that's an arrangement by Pat Alonzo Conway. So he did he arranged that section and the Merleton dance, which is a really fun dance as well. All of the arrangements I just think are so creative and interesting and fun and different, and it's just such a joy to perform to the music. I just kind of want to bounce around in my seat while I listen to it.
And she was, while the music was playing, she was bouncing around in her seat. So it just kind of picks you up to that.
It does. It does. Yeah.
It really does. Two performances coming up. Saturday, December the 13th at 8 o'clock p.m. Mm-hmm. Sunday, December the 14th at 2 o'clock p.m. So if you're a night person, the Saturday evening performance. And if you're more of an afternoon matinee person, Sunday the 14th at 2 o'clock p.m. Both performances are at Johnson County Community College at the Polsky Theater. The address is really easy to remember. 12345 College Boulevard, Overland Park, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, 66210. And the number to call, I guess at the Polsky Theater as well, 913-469-4445. And, of course, can they also make arrangements online at your website?
Yes.
Your new website,
yes.
Incidentally. OwenCoxDance.org to see the Nutcracker and the Mouse King. More, it's a different version, a more of a darker version of the... of the Nutcracker, the normal Nutcracker show. I say normal, because there are different versions. And I'm sure over the years, people have always done different versions, probably.
Sure.
Yeah, over on their own.
Yeah.
Jennifer Owen is with us, the co-founder and artistic director at Owen Cox. We've talked about her career. She is also she also teaches as well. Mm-hmm. And she is having a dance workshop at 1 o'clock p.m. on, I guess, before the Sunday afternoon performance.
Yes. We have a new educational program called Take the Stage, which is an in-school residency for fourth graders, and it teaches music and dance once a week for a year-round in-school residency, and we're offering a workshop before the performance in the lobby at 1 p.m., and Rebecca Sakati, the artistic director of Take the Stage, will be conducting it, and we encourage children of ages 6 to 12 to participate. It's a lot of fun. They'll get to dance and learn more about the program. So,
do you want them to register? Do you want them just to come?
I think they can just show up.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and then this performance is shortly after the workshop, so they can dance and then see dance, and it should be a really fun afternoon.
Any age on these children, or is it children of all ages?
Well, pretty much all ages. It's recommended ages 6 to 12 is kind of the ideal range. If you're 13 or 14, that's fine, too. If you're 5, that's, fine.
If they're 60.
If you're able to follow directions, sure.
Happening.
Everybody gets to move.
On the 14th, this is at 1 o'clock p.m., an hour before the scheduled performance of The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, which is an afternoon performance on Sunday, December the 14th at 2 o'clock p.m. So come an hour early at 1 o'clock p.m., and Jennifer will show you through the paces.
Well, actually, Rebecca Sakati will be conducting the workshop. I'll be backstage getting ready for the performance because I'll be performing this year.
Are you going to be in it as well?
I am going to be in it. Last year I was off since I was pregnant, and this year I get to be in it again. So
this is probably the last year you're going to do it. You will do it again.
Yeah, we're taking a few years to focus on regional touring. So if you haven't seen the production or you want to make sure to see it this year, this is the year to do it because for a few years we won't be doing it.
Sure. Now, Owen Cox does shows throughout the year. What's coming up this spring?
We do. June 6th, we're doing a performance of Ludus Tonalis, which is a piano masterwork by Paul Hindemith, and Kairi Koshoyeva will be performing the work with our dance company. And we'll also be performing Bach Partita No. 3 that Elizabeth Salane of the Bach Aria Soloists will be performing live with us. So we're very excited about these two world premiere works that we'll be performing at White Recital Hall June 6th.
Yeah, so it's hard for you, I guess, to do season tickets. You could.
We do have season tickets, actually.
Do you? But you perform like I've seen you at the Nelson. I've seen you. You probably can't include that in your package. Those are just extras.
Well, actually, we have a standard season ticket that includes our fall performance, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, and the spring performance. So since we've already had our fall performance, it might just be easier to just buy single tickets, although if you want to contact us, we might be able to work something out.
We can set you up for next year.
That's right, absolutely.
OwenCoxDance.org. You can learn all about all that information there, as well as the current production, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, opening December the 13th on Saturday. At what point are you at now? Are you running the dancers through their paces even as we speak?
Well, we've been working with the Paseo students, and then we have everybody arriving and ready to start rehearsals this Saturday. So several of the dancers have done it before, so things go together pretty quickly, but we will be rehearsing very intensively for the 2 weeks leading up to the performance.
Our time is running out, but the musicians, you have some of the finest musicians in town.
Yes, we do, and they've been rehearsing, and we are thrilled to have Jeff Harshbarger, Rich Wheeler, Stan Kessler, Roger Wilder, Sam Weissman, really some of the finest musicians in the area performing piece with us. So.
Yeah, so fine musicians, some fine dancers, people that have been in the Kansas City Ballet before, such as yourself, and have actually done other versions of the Nutcracker as well.
Yes.
So it's probably kick to do this particular version after doing that version.
Yes, it is. It's a lot of fun.
So, Saturday, the 13th of December, 8 o'clock p.m., Sunday the 14th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Polsky Theater. I remember Mr. Polsky. At the Polsky Theater, 12345 College Boulevard, Overland Park, Kansas. The zip code, if you MapQuest thing, 66210. And the number to call over at Johnson County Community College is 913-469-4445 to make arrangements, perhaps to see The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, a presentation for the sixth year of the Owen Cox Dance Group. It won't be next year. They're going to take some time. They're going to make you want it. It'll come back in the future at some point, I'm sure.
We'll definitely bring it back. But for a few years, we're going to take a bit of a break and focus on regional touring.
Sure.
So.
Jennifer Owen, thank you, Chris, for being here. The co-founder and artistic director of the Owen Cox Dance Group. She's danced around the world. You need to ask her about some of those experiences to meet her in person. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, the holiday season rolls on and on. The Jazz Insider is next. Great jazz coming up. KKFI is known for its jazz and for its blues. So we have jazz from 1 to 3. Then we have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at Crossing the Road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.